This is Backstory, a daily conversation with New York Times reporters on the stories they're covering. I'm Jane Bornemeyer, editor of New York Times Radio. Today I'm talking to Steve Lohr about smart infrastructure, a new horizon for computer technology. Steve, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start really simply here. What is smart infrastructure?
It's the ability to slash computing power to all kinds of physical objects. I mean, what we've done with computers in the past has been they've been calculating machines from the early days in the 50s and 60s. The second transition was that we used computing for communications, linking computers together, then the World Wide Web, the Internet, all that we know is social networking. This next phase is using low-cost sensors that feed data back into computer systems so that we can then control these physical systems, whether it's traffic, food distribution, waterways, to make them more efficient. And in the efficiency, you save fuel and, of course, lower your carbon footprint.
So tell us more about the sensors themselves. What makes a smart sensor smart?
It can communicate two ways. It is a radio that communicates back to some receiver that then puts the data together. And one of the examples that people are using these days, and there's a lot of attention around, is so-called smart grids. This is an electrical distribution. And you put sensors on the utility lines for operating them more efficiently, but also you have what are called smart meters that you then put in your home that transmit back to the utility, you know, what level of power consumption you have. Beyond that, what you can do is give people information about when it's most costly to use either your air conditioning in the summer or your heating in the winter. And there have been a number of demonstration projects, and some utilities are doing this. But the big demonstration project actually was run by the Department of Energy in Washington State about a year ago. It ended. And they allow people to look, just going into a website, to be able to calibrate and say that, well, you know, I can live at 72 degrees instead of 68. And so people then set what they feel is comfortable for them. And that project, it turned out it saved 15% on average. People enjoy playing the game. And if you stretch that over a 20-year period, you no longer have to build about 30 large coal-fired utility plants.
So just to make sure I understand, a sensor could determine that I have my refrigerator on, my television is on, I'm using my air conditioner, I'm ironing, and send me some information that would encourage me to use less.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, each individual appliance having a sensor on and that kind of fine-grained thing is more in the future than, for example, this project was. It was basically sensors around the home telling you what the temperature is, right? And then the smart meter saying how much you're consuming or not. But you're right. I mean, in the future, that's what everybody is looking at, that you can, and you don't have to do it yourself. The idea is there's a huge difference between a system that can control things and you know, yelling at people to shut off the lights or turn down the air conditioner. I mean, as a nation and as a sort of a world, you know, policy approach, that just isn't, you know, moral suasion has its limits. So in the future, you will be able to kind of make these choices and you know, computing systems will be like orchestra conductors telling that you don't need that television on standby in the 8 hours that you're not there. You'll have smart homes as well. I mean, that's further along than we're going to get any time quickly. I mean, what I'm writing about mainly is about kind of large, traffic, food distribution and things, systems where we can do this now.
Well, let's talk about food distribution because in a way I can sort of more easily see how you would do this with an electrical grid than I can with food. So how would it work with food? What's the goal?
The goal is to reduce the amount of spoilage. In the United States, $48 billion worth of food is thrown away every year. But you put sensors or RFID tags on food crates. And so
it's not going to be in my little crate of strawberries that I buy, my little box of strawberries.
Since they don't ship them one by one, it's in the crate that holds whatever it is,
okay.
20 pints of strawberries. But they do, you know, do the calculations on this, and you know, the average carrot in America travels, 1,200 miles. Cauliflower is, 2,000. It's like, it's those kinds of things. And for real perishables, your strawberry example, this is one they've kind of studied closely. And it turns out that if an additional few hours out in the open air instead of being refrigerated, well, can cut its shelf life, instead of 5 weeks to 2.5 weeks, or 5 days to 2.5 days. It cuts it in half. A lot of these technologies, to be honest, are, were developed in the 40s and 50s for tracking things like the flow of equipment and parts through a factory. Or and this was all called operations research. And you could do it within, a contained world that you control. I mean, some of the early computing tools, like the Unix operating system and the C programming language, were developed at Bell Labs, partly to have a system, that was sophisticated and decentralized enough to track telephone calls into Manhattan.
And what is it now? What is it about this technology now that makes it different?
I mean, there's two things that really change. There are a few things that really change. One is the sensors allow you to put this in the physical world in a way that you couldn't in the past. It creates an avalanche of data coming back. And then that's what you then need, the better and better optimization, visualization, and modeling software to see patterns in the noise.
I can plainly see the value to the planet of these kinds of systems. Does anybody worry about the intrusion into an individual person's life by having a machine monitor how I'm using electricity and then sort of signaling to me to turn off my lights?
Yeah, and I think we're furthest down the road here, pun intended, is on some of these traffic congestion systems. I mean, the one that's really been successful is in Stockholm, and they've through a congestion metering system, they've reduced the traffic, downtown traffic, by 20%, carbon emissions by 12%, and added 40,000 more daily travelers to the public transit system. And the system turns out to make them, $80 million in revenue per year ahead. And it's not New York. I mean, Stockholm's, maybe a million and a half. But the mechanism for control is webcams. And the technology is good enough to that the webcams identify the license plate even in the snow.
Wow.
Automatically more than 95% of the time. Originally, they had both webcams and RFID tags, right? And the webcams worked well enough that you didn't need the RFID tags. Okay, fine. But you move all of this kind of monitoring and control moves you further and further towards something like a surveillance society. I mean, how willing people are willing to put up with that is a big difference. I used to cover Scandinavia. It's a different society than a lot of ours.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.